In the month the GlideScope had been under repair, there had been something like 1,500 safe landings at Guam Airport. It was a small thing, an inconvenience really, that made the task of landing a plane just a little bit more difficult. The second complication was the weather, Brenner continued. Normally in the South Pacific, you've got these brief weather situations, but they go by quickly. You don't have storms. It's a tropical paradise. But that night, there were some little cells, and it just happens that that evening they were going to be flying into one of those little cells a few miles from the airport. So the captain has to decide, what exactly is my procedure for landing? Well, they were cleared for what's called a VOR-DME approach. It's complicated. It's a pain in the ass. It takes a lot of coordination to set it up. You have to come down in steps. But then, as it happens, from miles out, the captain sees the lights of Guam. So he relaxes, and he says, we're doing a visual approach. The VOR is a beacon that sends out a signal that allows the pilots to calculate their altitude as they approach an airport. It's what pilots would rely on before the invention of the GlideScope. The captain's strategy was to use the VOR to get the plane close, and then once he could see the lights of the runway, to land the plane visually. Pilots do visual landings all the time. It seemed to make sense. But every time a pilot chooses a plan, he's supposed to prepare a backup in case things go awry. And this captain didn't. They should have been coordinating. He should have been briefing for the DME step-downs, Brenner went on. But he doesn't talk about that. The storm cells are all around them, and what the captain seems to be doing is assuming that at some point he's going to break out of the clouds and see the airport. And if he doesn't see it by 560 feet, he'll just go around. Now, that would work, except for one thing. The VOR on which he's basing his strategy is not at the airport. It's 2.5 miles away on Nimitz Hill. There are a number of airports in the world where this is true. Sometimes you can follow the VOR down, and it takes you straight to the airport. Here, if you follow the VOR down, it takes you straight to Nimitz Hill. The pilot knew about the VOR. It was clearly stated in the airport's navigational charts. He'd flown into Guam 8 times before, and in fact, he had specifically mentioned it in the briefing he gave before takeoff. But then again, it was 1 in the morning, and he'd been up since 6 a.m. the previous day. We believe that fatigue was involved, Brenner went on. It's a back-of-the-clock flight. You fly in and arrive at 1 in the morning, Korea time. Then you spend a few hours on the ground, and you fly back as the sun is coming up. The captain has flown it a month before. In that case, he slept on a first-class seat. Now he's flying in and says he's really tired. So there they are, the classic preconditions of a plane crash. The same 3 that set the stage for Avianca 052. By themselves, none of these would be sufficient for an accident. Together, they require the combined efforts of everyone in the cockpit. And that's where Korean Air 801 ran into trouble. Here is the flight recorder transcript of the final 30 minutes of KAL Flight 801. It begins with the captain complaining of exhaustion. 1:20 and 1 second. Captain, if this round trip is more than a 9-hour trip, we might get a little something. With 8 hours, we get nothing. 8 hours do not help us at all. They make us work to maximum, up to maximum. Probably this way, hotel expenses will be saved for cabin crews and maximized to flight hours. Anyway, they make us work to the maximum.